The Breakfast Club.
You have a chat to learned gentlemen through the morning. Adam White is the first of those. He's back again. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. Cap for you today.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't know either.
Clearly not protecting any unkept hair.
No, correct, which is what I'm needing to do. I'm not doing that today.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't know why either. Okay. Well, I don't know why I'm not. Maui Cup Day today.
It is. It is.
Caulfield Cup Day tomorrow.
It is.
We're right into the real spring now.
It's almost like you listened to my intro. Almost.
Yeah, I'm just reaffirming.
We need a winner today at the Maui Cup meeting. Or Pakenham. We can have a winner at Pakenham. Doesn't really matter. We don't mind where we win.
We need a winner anywhere at the moment, to be honest.
As long as we win. So that's our challenge today. I think today's our day.
Okay.
Lots of steps for you yesterday. You put a step count on the WhatsApp chat last night. You were pretty pumped with your world.
Well, I'm trying really hard. I'm trying really, really hard. And I'm doing pretty well.
You're doing very well. Yeah. Very well. Nice steps from you. Good numbers.
Well, yeah, but the weight's coming off.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. That's what I'm very pleased about. I'm
still concerned about the sustainability of our
regime. So am I. So am I, but I'm celebrating it while it's happening.
I'm celebrating having Adam Ramanauskas back with us on The Breakfast Club on a Friday morning. I wonder how many steps he had yesterday. Good morning, Rama.
Not too many, but I do love the accountability from Whitey. Putting it up there for all to see.
He's putting it out
within
there.
Within our little world.
Yep.
Is good. And then the little man out the back, Joey, put his up and... I think you, though, is a little different story.
Well, what have I done?
You put yours up, but clearly it's had an effect on you.
Oh, yeah. My shin feels like it's going to explode.
Hmm.
Midway through training last night, just explosion of pain. And I don't know why. I didn't do anything. Didn't get any impact.
They're thick.
Well, it's a strong bone.
Yeah. Maybe it's sort of really deep underneath. It could be a muscle problem.
Oh, no, it's not. It's bone. It's just dead set bone, and it's really painful.
We were talking yesterday about my heroics when I walked to Sorrento.
Twice.
Exactly right. Not at the same time, but at different times. And I know you.
I know if it's heroics.
You have no doubt it is.
I think it's stupidity. But that's a
anyway,
story.
I'm thinking about doing it again.
Right.
And Daniel said he'd come with me.
Based on what?
What do you mean?
Just walking?
Just
or
for something to
not
do.
Not going to have a bet with somebody to sort of prove a point this time? Or
just something to do. But I thought the difference would be that Daniel would come with me.
How far?
He's agreed to. It's 96 kilometres.
No, but how far do you want Daniel to walk with
him? Oh, way.
Oh, don't.
And so if
timing.
If Daniel does it, which he's going to, if I do it, which I'm going to, you're going to do it too.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
See, not team player, Daniel.
I aren't either.
I would think I'm happy to walk for a couple of hours with you, no worries. That's fine.
Anyone can do that.
Well, that's right. Yeah, anyone with sense will walk for a couple of hours. Anyone with stupidity will walk all 96.
Oh,
well. I've got bad chins.
You've had your hair shaved. Is that the shortest it's ever been?
No. It's just as the longest it's ever been recently. It's coming over the years.
That way.
It's coming over the years.
Which is very rare for me.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to do.
I got the home job done, which was nice. I had enough, so I said to the wife, get the clippers out and let's shear away. So it needed it. It's fair to say, but we're all good.
You had a busy week, Rammer?
Trade period, of course. Look, the first couple of days
when does the trade period start, Rammer?
Soon.
Yeah, pretty soon, actually.
I think it's soon.
Yeah. But what was it? In the end, there was 20 players that moved. Now, it hasn't been probably the big names of the past that we've become accustomed to over recent years, but guys get their opportunities. Yeah, it was a little bit slow this time around, and you know we're talking about second and third string ruckman and those guys moving around, but there's only really a couple that didn't move from all that potentially wanted to, but from our point of view, all our guys that wanted to move were able to do that, so we were happy with not how you perform, but what we're able to execute over that period of time.
You did say, I do remember you saying at the start, in fact, might have been a couple of weeks before, don't get too excited.
No.
It's going to be a pretty low-key sort of affair.
Like we through this period of time, and this without a word of a lie, we've probably got, I reckon, between 13 and 18 sort of things on the go, players on the go that, you know, whether they're going to move or not, but they're really serious, deep conversations with clubs, the player, and how that's going to be executed.
Yeah.
This time round, and from a long, long way out, I think we only had four or five the whole time. And that's very, very rare. Now, whether that's the market, whether that's list spots, whether that's salary cap, whatever that may be, it just seemed weird. And it continued on that path. And
yep.
There was no surprises that bobbed up for us late. Like there was no surprise. Usually there's a surprise that pops up on the weekend, that middle weekend. Didn't happen. So we were always expecting it to be quiet for us then coming into the last week. And it was. We got the Jordan Clark deal done, I think, at about 6:30-ish. So we had an hour to spare.
Is that because you had to wait on final day? Is there an 80th?
Nah.
You can't do stuff any between midday and 6 or something?
No. So Jordan Dawson got done the night before. And then that when it opens up on the Wednesday, that deal went straight through. And then the Jordan Clark, it took a little bit more time on the Wednesday, just with those late pick swaps, which I still find remarkable that clubs even worry too much about that. But by 6:30, quarter to seven on Wednesday, Jordan Clark was done and we were having a quiet beer.
One of the things that has been spoken about a lot, particularly in that sort of last 3 or 4 days, was the whole Hawthorn potential fire sale, which ultimately didn't happen. The closest that went was Luke Bruce.
Yes.
But he ultimately stayed. Do you think...
And that was only on the back of Bobby Hill.
Yeah. Well, it depends who you talk to.
That had to be executed.
Yeah. But there was that feeling that Luke Bruce, even if Bobby Hill stayed, that they would still potentially look at Luke Bruce, and they used the thought of the Toby Green's not going to be playing the first 5 weeks and all those sorts of things.
Yep.
But do you think there will be an issue at Hawthorn with Sam Mitchell and those players, or do you think that it was transparent enough that they'll get over that pretty quickly?
Well, you don't know what was spoken about in their exit meetings.
Yeah.
That's the part that I think we're all very unaware. I think it caught us a little bit by surprise when Jeff Kennett made his comments. And it was like, oh, hey, hang on a minute. What's he talking about here? What's going on here? Now, we manage a number of those guys, Jack Gunston, Tom Mitchell, Chad Wingard, and the conversations never got any further than basically, is this happening? And it was, no, it's not. And that was the end of it.
Mm.
There was never, those players never spoke with any other clubs or the like. It was said, I think Hawthorn were hoping that a club within the top 10 would come and say, here's our top 10 pick, but no club did that.
Mm.
So, yeah, there might be a couple of little conversations that Sam has to have, but I think they're a regular occurrence at clubs.
Yeah.
After this period.
And I think, Half, you talked about this as well, that the fact that sort of Jeff Kennett and to a lesser extent Richie Vandenberg sort of put it on the table that they were open to big names moving, I think it's sort of, whoa, okay, this is pretty serious sort of stuff. That it meant then that any kind of conversation about that meant that I think they're in the spotlight a little bit more.
Just on that, Half, you always have to be open to improving your club, to improving your playing list.
That's the whole period's about, isn't it?
That's right. You always have to be. So where Hawthorn identify themselves at in this period of their, let's call it, they're not rebuilding as such, but they're going through a phase now where they're reloading with those younger players in a particular age demographic. But if you're not open to doing that, I think as a football club, you're probably kidding yourself. You've got to be open to it. But then how that then is, I guess, pushed out publicly is the key to it. Okay, now, I think, like I said, I think Jeff Kennett's comments caught people off guard a little bit. But I don't think within the football club, players, staff would have been unaware that was happening.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The general theme of the whole period is to improve your list. That's your duty.
How do we get back? How do Hawthorn get back to playing finals football quickly?
Yeah, well, handy to get some players back in the back line.
Correct.
Well, I think they'll do that.
Do you think there's a difference between improving your list and winning the trade period, or do you think it goes hand in hand? Because I reckon sometimes there's a bit of a difference. It's this want for clubs to be seen to be winning each trade and winning the trade period rather than actually improving your list. I know that they're kind of similar, but I reckon they're kind of different as well.
But don't think Clubland, and you probably speak better on this than me, Rama, Clubland has a win-loss sort of mentality. Did we improve it or did we not?
Hmm.
It's not so much a win-loss, like a PR win, because it's all about PR. The win-loss is PR.
Yeah.
And you can, but you can sell anything. If you get your wording right, you can sell anything to your footy members. It's about improving.
Clubs get into the habit of wanting to settle old scores.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm kind of getting to a little bit as well.
And that's where it does get probably childish is not the right word, but it does get a little bit unsavoury sometime in those cases.
Petty.
Yeah, petty. And I think if you've always got an eye on actually improving your list, okay, what are we actually got to do? It might not improve us next year, but in 2 years' time, in 3 years' time, it's going to be a big improvement for us. So, well, at the end of the day, if you look at, say, Fremantle, for example, they lose Chera, who's a very good player, no doubt, but they get Jordan Clark, who they've wanted now for a period since he's been drafted. Will Brody could still be a good player.
I agree. I think he's the...
But they also got pick 19. They got first pick of the second round of the draft, which is so coveted. All clubs come after that on the second day of the draft because there's always a player that missed out, that slipped through.
Yeah. Can't believe you got to 19. Great leadership qualities. All that sort of stuff. That's what happens. That's the conversation afterwards.
We sat down. We couldn't believe that he wasn't picked on the first night. It just was an obvious pick going into day two.
That's all the stuff.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah, I'm all about a team improving their list for not just 1 year. Now, the 1 year improvement at teams like a Richmond, they get Robbie Tarrant. So that fills a hole there. Can they reload and just go one more time with the playing group that they got? But teams like Carlton, Fremantle, they need to be looking for 5 years down the track.
Mm.
And, you know, Chera and Hewitt at Carlton, that's 5 years down the track. Yeah. Or Hewitt maybe not so much, but definitely Chera.
Yeah. Well, it's at least 4 years. Yeah. So they're playing.
But Fremantle with Jordan Clark and Brody, well, they're thinking longer term. They're thinking, well, we need to continue to add to Brayshaw, to Sarong, you know, those Sean Darcy in the middle of the ground.
Mm.
Johnny's on the road. He wants to talk to you blokes about the Bombers, I think. Hello, John.
Fellas, how are you?
Going all right, thanks, buddy. How are you?
Pretty disappointed it didn't go through again. The AFL stuffed us up, didn't they? Gil McLaughlin, eh?
What'd Gil do?
Well, give him 6 weeks, didn't he? Toby Green, when he was only getting three. He kept his nose out of it, mate. Is he going to get involved in any tribunal again? Don't like it. They've always got a thing against Essendon, haven't they, the AFL?
I wouldn't have thought that this was an Essendon decision to challenge Toby Green's sanction, which I, John, as you would have well known through our conversations on the wireless, fully agreed with the AFL's involvement in that. I'm happy with the 6 weeks. It did put a bit of pressure on Bobby Hill to stay from the Giants' perspective.
But the Bobby Hill one's interesting because by all reports, and I'm pretty certain it's correct, is that it only came on Friday that he wanted to go to Essendon.
So he signed a contract with the Giants a month ago. And then all of a sudden there's this desire, there's this need to get to the Bombers for family reasons.
He has a cousin that plays at Essendon's VFL team.
Yeah. VFLW team.
Yeah. VFLW team.
Yeah. He has a cousin who plays at St Kilda and a cousin who plays at Richmond in the men's team. So don't give me the Bombers rubbish.
No, I don't.
I'm not falling for this garbage.
Please.
And then the Magpies came knocking. The Giants didn't reject Collingwood's offer, is my understanding.
No, the Giants thought that there was at late. Giants thought that Bobby Hill's he management could potentially get to Collingwood.
Correct. He wanted to go to Essendon.
Yeah.
But this is...
Did Essendon want him?
They put their future second round
pick. No, I understand that. But was it Essendon seeking Hill or was it Hill seeking Essendon initially?
No, I think it was Hill seeking Essendon. Yeah.
Yeah. This whole future picks trading is very interesting, I reckon. It's the old Ronan Keating song, Tomorrow Never Comes.
Yeah.
You just keep trading your futures and it doesn't actually exist.
Exactly right.
It doesn't exist, future picks. I think it's a bit of a farce, but it seems to get some movement happening. So I'm prepared to wear it. But this future round two, round three pick, it doesn't matter.
It's like a birthday present or a Christmas present where that extra thing's just thrown in because it makes it look better.
Yeah.
Makes it look a bigger thing to open.
Yeah, well, that's always good.
Well, it depends what it is.
Sorry, Johnny, not to be for you. One of our favourite athletes in the country is Chris Golding from Melbourne United. They are, of course, the reigning champs in the NBL after their magnificent performance last season. Of course, he's a bronze medalist at the Olympics too with the Boomers campaign. We haven't spoken to him for a while, but he's got a bit on his plate and I want to find out how he's tracking. Chris, good morning.
G'day, mate. How are we going?
We're going very well. How's you going?
I'm going very well. Been a big 6 months or so, as you just mentioned, but getting ready to head back down to Melbourne and get stuck in for the next season.
Now, you're back down to Melbourne because you're in Bris Vegas at the moment, and you've been there since the Olympics, is that right?
Yeah, I have been. Obviously, with all the interrupted travel of last year. My wife and I and our daughter didn't get to spend a lot of time with family, so we've been up here just camping out, spending time with family, because once we head back down, we don't know when we'll see them again.
No, that's a fair point. And you haven't missed much down here, so it's probably a good place to be, I reckon.
Yeah, it's been nice to cruise around with a little bit of freedom.
Now, well, there's some hoops to talk to you about, as always, and look forward to doing that. But you're also getting yourself ready for the Spring Carnival. You're involved with the Racing.com Pick 7 campaign, the Pick 7 competition, for fans can just enter free on a weekend, try and make $100,000.
Am I ever. It hunted me. It was a vast search for the best punters and tipsters around the country, and they landed on me.
Why did they land on you? What drew them to you, Chris?
It's a great question. The first week, I picked 1 out of 7. So I'm not too sure. But, you know, I'm a guy that likes to have a little bit of a dabble on the horses. And this Pick 7 game's fantastic. Free to play. You can have a crack at winning $100,000.
It's hard to dispute. Why wouldn't you want to be a part of that?
Well, I spent Saturday with Merv Hughes, who is also part of the Pick 7. And I think he did worse than you.
Well, Saturday wasn't bad for me. I picked 3 winners, and one of them was scratched. So I was running at a 50% clip. But Wednesday's racing yesterday, we won't talk about.
Right. Okay. All right. Didn't quite go to plan. But you can get involved in that action, pick7.racing.com. And free cash, basically, is what you can win if you're any good, if you pick the 7 races in a row, which is not very easy to do, just by the way.
No. Are you someone that goes to the races a lot? Carnival time or outside of basketball time, Chris?
Normally, if our schedule permits, I love going to the Spring Carnival. I love going to races. But, you know, Saturdays, we're generally gearing up to play. So I don't know if a day at Caulfield leads well into a big game against Perth.
No. So talking about gearing up to play, you're about to head back to Melbourne to get ready for the new season. It's been pushed back a little bit. We spoke to Jeremy La Liga during the week about the fixture. Are you ready? Because you had such a grueling campaign from an NBL season into an Olympic campaign. Are you ready to get back into it?
Yeah, I am. You know, my wife and I have been talking. It's like we actually want to get back down to Melbourne. We want to get to our own place and get stuck in and get going again. And I've had a great opportunity to refresh the body. As you said, I went straight from winning that championship into a long Olympics campaign, which was fantastic, but I definitely needed a little break, and I've had that now. And I'll get back down to Melbourne with a good chunk of time to get back into great shape leading into the season. So very excited to get back and excited at the group we've got together. We've got some really cool new pieces that I'm excited to get on the floor with.
I want to talk about, obviously, the team you've got as you aim to defend your title. But just looking back now on the Olympic campaign, outside of actually that medal, that elusive medal that you got, is there a couple of things that stand out to you that you learnt about yourself or learnt about some of your teammates that you didn't know?
I just think we just had such a great group that, you know, basketball at times when people play all over the world, it's a team sport, but there can be quite a selfish element to it because everyone wants to succeed and they want to play and they want to, you know, they want to show how good they are themselves. But, you know, we had guys that play all over the world and are the man on their respective teams. But the way that we came together and gelled and people put their own sort of their own achievements on the back burner to go out and win this medal. I thought that was really cool, and I think it speaks to a great deal about how to achieve team success.
Let's start with the first leg of the quaddy, though, Dino. Over the 1,400 metres, it is race number 7 for those playing at home. It's Alexis Tristark Stakes, a group 2 for the 4-year-old Nutmares at Weights and Penalties. And there are 10 going around, Dino. And number 2... Colette is favourite for James Cummings. D-Lane is in the saddle. Is about $3 at tab.com.au. Is she in your numbers?
Well, I backed her to win on this day, Daniel, but I backed her to win the Caulfield Cup. But she had a hoof abscess about a couple of weeks ago, missed the Turnbull Stakes, missed the Caulfield Stakes, and now she's here over 1,400 metres. She loves wet ground, so she certainly goes in the numbers, but certainly an unusual preparation. I think down from Sydney for Matthew Smith, looks to be going well. She's got the ability to race in a pretty prominent spot and has had the 2 runs back, looks to be going well. and has got a terrific chance here. Pride of Jenny was big odds last start, but ran really well at Flemington. And she's seems to be a mare that appreciates a bit of galloping room. So drawn out, rolling to the front here, I think will actually suit her, and she'll run very well. Colic goes in the quaddy. I think she's a little bit overbet at this stage, but loves heavy ground. Obviously a Golden Eagle winner at 1,500 metres last spring, but probably more targeted at that, to be honest. So this is maybe the tick over run she has before a race like the Empire Rose, now that her preparation's been modified because of a hoof problem at the start of the campaign. I'm giving a little chance to 10 Steinem. I don't know if she'll handle the wet. First up, she ran sixth at Mornington. She ran the best last 200 of the meeting. That race was never going to suit her, but I do think this race will suit her a bit better, and she can run well at a price. And maybe number six, Aidensfield, who is a superior wet tracker, whether she's quite good enough. But then look at her recent runs, and they're around some pretty handy horses. I put her in next best. But I think Nimalee for Maddie Smith stable's got a great winning chance. Both of her runs this time in have been great.
All right, that's number three, Nimalee. Quinny, I'm just going through your numbers. You've gone, Colette, unsurprisingly, tip the favourite, Quinny. What's the market at the tab at the moment?
Now, that's very unfair. I think I've tipped two or three favourites only tomorrow, so I'll be making him take that comment back after the next three races we look at. But Colette has been popular into $2.50. Nimalee, a $4.80 equals second elite with Charlotte, Pride of Jenny, an $8.50 chance. Dino, we're all going to be on Weather Watch tomorrow, but is there a horse that will be more impacted one way or another than Colette?
I wouldn't think so. She's just got the jar of the track. That's all she needs. And she's even effective on the dry. She's proven that with the two runs this time in. But she does elevate enormously on the wet, having won a ATC Oaks and a Golden Eagle last year on heavy ground.
Dino, just on the weather, we probably should get that information across or that conversation out early doors, because I'm not sure if you've had a look at the bomb radar and you've spoken to your weatherman, or you've talked millage with Whitey offline, which we all love
to do. That's what I was going
to
talk online with him, because I haven't. No.
Righty, Whitey, what are we doing? What do we do with this weather situation for Caulfield tomorrow? How do we plan for this?
Plan for up to 50 mils.
50?
50.
Yep. That's the...
What time?
Well, a lot of it will come overnight. So I said up to 50 mils, but there's a fairly big range.
That could be six.
Yeah.
Well,
six.
Because this is the, this,
it could be
what
two.
What you need to understand is the system that's approaching overnight.
What about a window?
There'll be some suburbs that will get 45, and there'll be some suburbs that get 30.
What's Caulfield going to
up to get 50.
Well, I'm not
we're talking about the eastern suburbs of Melbourne.
That's an event.
I'm going to say there's going to be, between now and Caulfield Cup time,
38 mils.
38.
In the Caulfield region.
Yep.
Between
that's now
Monday,
and Cup Day. And not
5:15.
Yes, that's
5:15.
Right. I'm going to go 38 mils.
Right. Okay. So how do we work around that, Dino, from a punting perspective? Do we...
Bring your flippers.
We put flippers on, yeah. I was just going
to
say.
Do we have to lean towards the mudders of the mudders sort of stuff? Or do we...
Yeah, I think so. And the rail goes back true where it was on Saturday. The rail was 9 metres Wednesday. We've had two pretty firm tracks, so wouldn't have had a lot of damage, but enough. And so a bit of rain will soften it up. They'll get off the rail, I think, through the day. So I'll be watching for a pattern to emerge where they win, you know, more towards the centre of the track as the day wears on.
According to the Bureau of Meteorology, possible rainfall today, 15 to 25 mils. So that's a little band we like, Rammer.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's an appropriate band.
10 mils, fair.
Possible rainfall tomorrow, 6 to 10.
He's gone 6 to 50.
I didn't say 6 to 50. I said
you said could be 6, could be 50.
No, that's isolated suburbs. I'm saying, anyway, I've made my call. I've gone with 38, all right?
It's just nice to have you.
Yeah.
It's just nice to have you. Righto, so we're planning for that, and we're looking towards the soft track specialists for the Caulfield Cup Day tomorrow. Now, Rammer.
Yes.
Your job here is to go through and recap the numbers as Dino announces them for us on the Friday form. Correct. What are the numbers for race number 7, the first look at the quaddie tomorrow?
3, 8, 2, 10, and 6.
3, 8, 2, 10, and 6. Let's have a look at race number 8, which is the second leg of the quaddie, the Carlton Draft, the Lingy Stakes, and I might be having a few Carlton Drafts tomorrow. I just might, as I'm watching the action unfold. 1,100-metre affair, Dino. That's a listed event. Three-year-old fillies and mares and up. We've got, 16 going around. Number 11, Gem of Scotland for Will Clark, has been scratched, as has number 1, Volpine. So there's two emergencies getting a crack. Sugartown, great name, and Smokin' Val come into the field at this stage. Now, we've got equal favourites, Dino, number two, and number 10, Vada and Ruby Saki at 550 in a very open market, open field for the Alinghi Stakes. How do you play this one?
Yeah, it certainly is, Daniel, and they're both in the numbers, the equal favourites. I'm going to go with Vada. I think the first up run was pretty encouraging at Warwick Farm, and I think she'll just be a little bit improved by that run. She's won 5 of 8 at the distance. She's 3 from 3 on heavy ground. So we're looking at a horse that probably fits this sort of race very nicely, and she can take up a spot in running or can come from back in the field. So she's got that versatility. So I like her as much as anything to beat 6 Bless Her, a recent addition to the Clayton Douglas stable. Ran really well at Sandown, and she's much better on softer ground. Gets the blinkers on here and has got a terrific record at 1,100 metres and at Caulfield. Number 9, Emanate, the other James Cummings representative. She has had the two runs back. I think she's ticking over okay, and another one that her soft track form's good, and her heavy track run was a total forgive. So I think on the fresh side, she's somewhere in the finish. But chances also to 12 Lashes, who's first up. We've seen her in Melbourne before. Looks to be trialling really well and can handle soft ground. And 10 Ruby Saki, who does love the soft ground, where the barrier one by this stage will be ideal. And she hasn't won for a little while, but looks to have trialled up quite well. But now on with Vada, and as you mentioned, as the market suggests, a very open race.
So it is an open race. 550, the equal favourites, Quinny. I mean, what are the punters doing? Are they angling and focusing on those top two in the market, or is there cash going everywhere at the moment?
Bit of both, Daniel. The two at the top of the market have both been popular. Of Vada and Ruby Saki, Vada has been the better backed. Emanate's had support. Now it's $6. Bless Her, $6.50. And there's been money for How Womantic, second up tomorrow. What did you make of her, Dino?
Oh, I thought after her first up run she'd win this race, but I just don't really like her on wet ground. So that's the concern for me with How Romantic. I can understand on form why you could like her, but I just don't think she's as brilliant. She only had the two goes on soft ground, but I don't think she's been as effective.
Righty-o. Quinny, you have selected Rainbill, number 13, not in the numbers. Are you comfortable with that?
Well, as you know, Daniel, I like to look for value.
What's Rainbill paying?
$14.
Right, okay. Some Quinny sort of roughy sort of action there.
He's clearly got himself mixed up.
Yeah, isn't
it? She's the one I'm a little bit nervous about leaving out, but she can understand Quinny's logic there.
It's got to be a typo. It's got to be.
Well,
Quinny. No, not Quinny. Rammer, what's your name? Yeah, you. Adam Ramanaskas, can you please recap the numbers for the second leg of the quaddie, please? The Carlton Draft and Lingy Stakes.
2, 6, 9, 12 and 10.
2, 6, 9, 12 and 10. Let's get to the feature event on the card, Dino. The Carlton Draft Caulfield Cup, 2,400 metres, 3-year-old and up. Group 1 affair for $5 million. Purse. Now that is worth winning, I reckon. We have 18 going around, a full field of 18 going around, no scratchings at this stage. Keep your eye on that through the morning on RSN 927 tomorrow. And we've got a very, very well-supported favourite, Dino, although the drift has come since the barrier draw the other day where Incentivise drew barrier number 20. Picket Fences and the form guide, $2.60 at tab.com.au. Are you on?
I'm getting very tempted, Daniel, because it's a total nonsense about the barrier. He'll take it out of play in the first 200 metres. He'll just come across. He's got tactical speed. That's how he'll race, and he'd be better out there than inside where he'd have to dig up. He can come across at his leisure. So he's getting very tempting to me. I had no interest in him at $1.90. I've seen a lot better chances than him in Caulfield Cups get beaten at better prices than, you know short prices. But he's very tempting at that price. I'm with Delphi, though. I loved his run last week. I just thought that was a really good stayers run. Damien Oliver hooked him out early, took off, gave him the solid hit out. He's won 5 of 9, so he's a winner too. We're looking at horses, and my top four are all last start winners, and I think they're the four last start winners in the field, and I think that's a really good starting point, and they've won quality races. So I'm with Delphi to beat Incentivise, but it was probably that I just didn't like him at $1.90. But as we've mentioned, that price is getting very, very inviting. Number 12, Montefilia. I've been pretty keen on her for this race for a while, and she's done nothing wrong this campaign. She handles the wet ground. She's a legitimate winning chance. And Juwais, I thought, didn't have a lot of luck in the race in Sydney two starts back, and I didn't know what to make of her after that. But the win on Wednesday just shows she's going well. She's got no weight. She's well drawn to get a cheap run, and she can be somewhere in the finish. But I think there's three main chances, and if you want to extend it out to four, it would be Juwais. But no, I'm with Delphi and the GOAT, D. Oliver, to ride the record-breaking fifth Caulfield Cup win.
Righto, okay. So pretty clear cut, says Dino, apparently, Quinny. A three-pronged attack, throwing Juwais, if you like, after his last start win in the Coonjie to get to this position. But what are the punters doing? Are they letting incentivised drift and going to come at some stage, do you think?
That's a great question. And I'll be really magnificent. Fascinated to see what the market does with incentivise, who was as short as $1.90, but twice has hit $2.60, and that's been snapped up back into $2.50. So that might be around the breaking point, but race day will be interesting again. Delphian, $8.50, second elect. Then we've got Young Verda, a $10 chance. Nonconformist, $12. The Chosen One, $13. Explosive Jack at $15. Now, Dean, I've got to ask you about number 8, Quick Thinker, because Matt Nevitt, the rising star at RSN, has been telling anyone who will listen to get on this horse for a place. He's backed it to win the debt of a small nation. He's going to pay off his unit and buy an engagement ring if it runs top three.
Wee!
Some hope.
Well, that would be some achievement. One, for it to run a place, and then for him to complete all of that. So, look, he's the relative to their ability, he's probably the best wet tracker in the race. So his form will certainly elevate off. Well, he ran okay in the Newcastle Cup and forgive run in the Metropolitan. But, yeah, he's probably the one most advantaged on wet ground. That's the absolute positive for Quick Thinker. He is an ATC Derby winner on wet ground.
Righto. So that's a very, very nice little side story to the Caulfield Cup tomorrow. Matt Nevitt is going to propose.
Only for a place.
The Hornet is going to propose.
He's got three chances.
Poor
Mrs. Hornet.
Mrs. Queen Hornet. B. Now, Raz, Quinny, you've tipped Delphi as well, so you'd be pleased about Dino's summation there. That's good business. Rama, I've had a blank. Can you recap the numbers for me, please, for the Caulfield Cup tomorrow?
10-2-12-17.
10-2-12-17. All last start winners. The only last start winners in the race, says Dino, for the Carlton Draft Caulfield Cup. $5 million Group 1 tomorrow. The feature event on the card at Caulfield. The last leg is race number 10, a Group 2 affair over the 1,000 metres, the McCafe Caulfield Sprint. Dino, we've got 12 going around, and number 3, Malkovich, is first up tomorrow, but favourite at tab.com.au at around about $4.
Yes, it's a good sprint race to finish the program, Daniel. Most of the main chances have drawn in, so it'll be interesting to see how this track is playing by this stage of the day. I'm going to go with Oxley Road here. He's run first up, was good at Flemington, and then his second up run, where he was really poorly weighted at Caulfield against Master Crusader, who's obviously a leading contender in tomorrow's Everest, was just outstanding, where he only got a kilo and a half off Master Crusader. All of a sudden, he drops 5.5 kilos, and I think he'll get a great run here. He handles wet ground. I think he's a great winning chance and a real opportunity for this is the name to remember maybe more out of Caulfield Cup Day than any horse, and that's Blake McDougall, who I think will make an absolute name for himself in the next 12 right. months as a jockey.
Yep.
He's already ridden a stack of winners on the provincials, but this might be the one that breaks him into the big time. And I think this has got a great chance to beat number 8, General Bow, the 3-year-old who I think is racing really well. And I think 1,000 metres is his absolute sweet spot. And down in the weights, he'll run well. Melkovic has trialled up really well. 1,000 metres suits him. He makes his own luck. He handles wet ground. He'll give a good sight. And he's a bolt. Has been an absolute revelation since joining Will Clarkin's stable. He's won 5 of his last 6, and I think he's the one that could be swooping out wide and running really well, so he's the other one I'm including. But, yeah, really interested in Oxley Road, both for horse and rider, and maybe Peter Moody's still celebrating after a Caulfield Cup win and can finish the day on a big note with Oxley Road.
All right, so Oxley Road is the on-top selection at number 9. Now I've paid with great interest that Delphi was selected by Quinny after Dino selected Delphi, and Oxley Road has been selected by Quinny in the paper after Dino has selected Oxley Road. There's some sort of plagiarism going on here. Nicholas, what's the market say?
Now, I've been accused of many things, Daniel, but I don't think you can accuse me of copying Dino when the paper goes to print Wednesday night.
Does
so,
it really,
there we go.
Really, does it really?
It's a digital edition.
And I'm very good with the technology, so you're spot on. That could have happened.
Yes, I've seen that.
Malkovich heads the market here at $4. The market mover has been the second elect, Enthar. Was $11 into 9 in pre-post betting and has done nothing but firm all the way down to 440. Clearly the best backed runner.
Right.
Dino, not in your quaddie. Such a fascinating runner, seen for the first time since failing in the Blue Diamond. What do you make of Enthar?
I don't know what to make of Enthar, to be honest. As you said, hasn't raced since the Blue Diamond. I think she was gearing up to run in the Moyer Stakes and they didn't quite have her ready. And she runs tomorrow. I've been a little bit underwhelmed by her recent trials, fair to say. So most recent of those, I think, was at Cranbourne in recent weeks. She's had two of them. She had one where she just bowled around quietly, but I thought the most recent one, ridden along a bit late. I really don't know what to make of her. And I think maybe the 1,000 metres and the earmuffs off and all that means they're just going to cut the ribbons and let her run and see how far she goes. So I think she'll probably be in front if you like her.
So she's right. Under the odds now and you're surprised to see the backing sort of thing?
A little bit, unless there's knowledge that she's really good on wet ground. That's the other thing. We'd have to factor that in. Whether she handles it, the genuine soft ground, and with the 38 mils predicted, it's going to be a pretty wet track.
Do we get that under and over market on the 38 mils, Quinny, just by the way?
Yeah, they've gone under 28.5 mils.
I'm just not going to be able to not look at the radar and barrack for rain.
As if that's a change.
36 hours.
The WhatsApp group's going to be brilliant over the next couple of days.
And if it doesn't happen, you'll blame the plane.
Spot on, Dino. Hey, Rammer, can you recap race number 10, please, for us, the last look at the quaddie?
9, 8, 3, and 6.
Now, you're not going to believe this. There's been some listeners out there that have had some troubles this morning.
Have there been some listeners?
There's plenty of them. There's lots of trouble. I don't know what happens with you people on a Friday morning, but there's some shenanigans going on out there.
We need a whole segment for this now.
Can you please repeat the numbers? I've been busy putting the finishing touches on my Adrian Dodoro voodoo doll. Thanks, says Stephen in Geelong. Morning, Wellesley. Can you please repeat the quality numbers, Rammer? Missed them as I was having trouble trying to convince the missus that 6 steamed dim sims I just had for breakfast is healthy eating. That's yesterday's conversation, or Wednesday's conversation. Boys, sorry, I missed the numbers. I was circling all the Quinny selections and noticed they already have the favourite star next to them in the form guide. That's from Tommy and Ash Burton. Can you please repeat the quaddie numbers? Bad reception in the cells over here in Perth after attending the grand final.
There's
our winner for today, I think. David Frankton South says, I missed the quaddie numbers. I was drawing out my phone, which copped the first of Whitey's 38 mils. Would Rammer please help out? That's becoming a bit of a theme in the rest of them. Can I grab Dino's numbers again? Call the curator, Nick McPenn, to write in the 38 mils for the rain records. And Gav the Greenskeeper comes in and says, Cole and I are building an ark. Can I get the numbers, please? Hey, punters, I missed the quaddie numbers. I was out emptying and polishing up my rain gauge ready to catch the 38 mils, Pete and Port Melbourne. And then half, I was struck down by sudden shin pain and lost my job to Diesel Williams and missed the quaddie numbers. Can you please ask Rammer to read them out from Juppie and Bendigo?
Hasn't even got an office, that man.
There's a lot of people have had some turmoil this morning, Rammer. Can you help them out with recapping the quaddie numbers tomorrow?
Okay, race 7, 3, 8, 2, 10, and 6. Race 8, 2, 6, 9, 12, and 10. Race 9, 10, 2, 12, and 17. And then race 10, 9, 8, 3, and 6.
All right. We're going to have a sneaky look at the Everest too, the Tab Everest tomorrow in Sydney for those players as well. As Dino says, lots. If they're going to put it on, be rude of us not to talk about it. So we'll do that very shortly. But let's get to the formula bit, Dino. Raging success it was last week. You can register at the website, rsn.net.au. Dino invests on your behalf. We had a winner last week, which is great news. Who are you playing for today and where are you going?
We're playing for John Wilson of Trafalgar. And for John, we are having $40 the win on race 2, number 1, Vianello. $40 the win, race 3, number 3, Extreme Flight. $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 2, number 1, into race 3, number 3. And that's for John Wilson of Trafalgar.
We got it last week.
Yep, we did. Mm. We did.
With dominance. What's that?
That's a scoop. I just spent the last 2 minutes talking about that.
No, I'm just reaffirming.
Race two, number one, Quinny. Into race three, number three. What does it come to, please?
It's raining in Ballarat. $2.
BNLO $2.50. Extreme Flight $3.40. The All Up comes to $8.50.
$8.50 for the All Up. 2-1 into 3-3. We got that last week, Whitey.
Did you know that last week, Dino's All Up, the formula, that yes. It got up.
It did. My understanding is that exactly
dominant
happened.
Fashion.
Now, we'll get to the Ramarufi in a sec. Well, let's go to the Tab Everest before we get there, Dino. We'll finish with the Ramarufi. We've got a terrific race. $15 million up for grabs. Wait for Age of Fear over the 1,200 metres. Kieran McAvoy's owned this race. Three of the four runnings he has won. He's on the equal favourite tomorrow. Classique Legend at 4:20 along with Nature Strip at tab.com.au.
Yeah, I don't know if he wanted the millage for Classique Legend up there. He's a very good horse, but he's a better horse on drier ground. I think it sets up well for Nature Strip. The couple of times that he's been beaten in this race or been beaten by Eduardo, he's drawn to the inside of Eduardo, and he's a little bit of a stumbling block for him. But this time, he's drawn barrier 10, Eduardo's drawn 7. They're the speed horses. They settle 1-2, but he'll be on the outside of him this time. And I think Nature Strip will run really well. But I have been tipping Masked Crusader all the way through, and I'm just hoping on grand final day he peaks. And just hoping he doesn't miss the start as much as he's been of late. He doesn't need to, because he wears Chautauqua's colours, he doesn't need to try and beat Chautauqua. I think he'll run really well, Masked Crusader, and at around the $10 at tab.com.au, I think he's a bit of value. But Nature Strip's a great chance. And I think the other one is the Victorian representative in the Inferno for Cliff Brown.
Yes.
He's run in the Moyer Stakes outstanding, and I think he'll be able to absorb the pressure. The little query is probably the wet ground, but I love the way he's going about his races, and I think the way this race sets up will really suit him.
Love the Inferno. I'm having that each way. Quinny, what's the market doing, please?
Nature Strip has been really well backed, into $3.60 now. Classique Legend, a $4.80 second elect. Eduardo, $6.50. Gitra, $7. And Masked Crusader, now at $10.
$10 for Dino's on top selection there in the Everest, the Tab Everest tomorrow. What about the Ramarufi?
Ready to sting the bookies? This is Rammer's Ruffy for the all-new Kia Stinger. The perfect balance of power and refinement. Book a thrill ride and experience the new Kia Stinger.
Very ready to sting the team at tab.com.au. Race 7, 8, 9, 10 are the quarter numbers. We've done that, those legs. Race 2 and 3 are the formula bet numbers where they've come from. Dino, where are we going for the Rammer Ruffy tomorrow?
Let's go to the first race, Daniel. We'll get it early. You said you might have a Carlton draft through the day, and hopefully old Slabs Hayes might provide with race one, number 7, Mimi's Award. I think she'll run really well for the Hayes boys, and her first up run was a lot better than it looks on paper. After a longer trip, she's got a great winning chance.
All right, race one, number 7, Mimi's Award. Quinny, what's happening at tab.com.au for race one, number 7?
Currently 13 the win, 3:30 the place.
Those things that you talked about the troubles through that time, because Scott Gullen's part of our program here, the leading athletics journalist.
I love Scotty.
Yeah.
Well, he loves you.
He loves you as well. Because he used to defend you all the time. He'd say, "Legend, Yana is a legend. She's such a cool chick. And the public just don't get her."
Scotty, I mean, he was actually at one point sitting on the end of my bed at the end. And I remember he rang the editor and said, "Not here. I don't know where she is. I haven't seen her." And he was half a meter.
Wow. It was explosive.
It's bombshell.
It was.
This is Woman's Day front page.
That's unlike Scott Gullen, because he always gives up. He's a leak.
I don't know about that. I think he's a guy you want riding shotgun with you when times are tough. And Yana Pittman knows that firsthand, as she told us about it through the week. So the great man himself has been good enough to join us this morning, the Herald Sun superstar. Scotland, welcome.
Thank you, Daniel. Taking you, 5 years to finally get hold of her and confirm the greatest story in Australian media. Which was a secret, apart from being in a book.
Well, yeah, that's right. It wasn't a big secret. It was in your bloody book. Quite remarkable scenes. We didn't even fish for that.
No,
Scotty.
This is volunteered.
This was volunteered, this information.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm very close to Yana. I've been spoken for about 5 years, but they are... Yeah, no, she's a great girl, as you said, and it was a very big moment in her life. It was near the Olympics, and she'd just been injured, so I remember it vividly, Daniel.
So take us through the background of it. I mean, why was your editor ringing you about Yana Pittman?
Well, it was before Athens, so it was about 3 weeks before Athens, and Jana was world champion at this stage. So she was a big deal. She was our biggest ticket for the athletics, and obviously her personality, people were pretty obsessed with Jana. So we were in Switzerland. She was about to compete there before going on to Athens. So I was there covering it in the lead-up, and the great girl did her knee, tore a meniscus in training and everything, and it had leaked out, and obviously I was there, and there was just this, we must get Jana, you know, it was all systems go, you got to get her, and she was very emotional at that time, much like Rama can get, and it was just sort of, I had to make an executive decision on when I would push her for the story, and naturally we got the story, but right then wasn't the right time, so I played that card.
But Scotty, how long had you been forming a relationship with Jana before then? Because what happens, and I mean this with the greatest amount of respect, a lot of journalists just go, I just want the story. And they don't actually think about, well, if I actually get to know the person, there might be a story. There might be a story in this. So how long had you had a relationship with Jana prior to that?
Probably at least 2 years, I reckon, Rama. She won the world championship the year before. She'd moved down here to be based in Melbourne, coached by Phil King and stuff. So, yeah, we built some trust, but clearly that moment sort of solidified that. So it was, you're right, it was, with track and field athletes, you get the opportunity to build trust, whereas, you know, nowadays in AFL, it's very difficult to get to the players and to show that sort of thing. So it had been a work in progress, but it hit pay dirt around that time.
I think the interesting thing, Scotty, is, and she said it herself through the TV show about how she was sort of misunderstood, but she probably would have done things differently if she had her time again. It kind of did take away from the fact that she was a dual world champion and was one of Australia's greatest athletes of the last 20 years when you really think about it.
Oh, absolutely. I think, as she said, I mean, she's got to take some fair bit of blame. She made some decisions which were a little bit silly, but the hysteria around her, the Jana drama, I mean, that was built up a lot around the Commonwealth Games, you know, fighting with Tams and Lewis and things like, she just managed to find herself in situations where she'd say or do something a bit silly. But facts are, you know, she was already world champion then. She still finished fourth in the Olympics with a bung knee. She won another title after having a child coming back. But she's a phenomenal athlete, but it was just all the peripheral stuff, which, you know, as she said on the show and told you guys, she did contribute to, but I think she was unfairly done by. The public didn't, probably till this year on that SAS, of seeing the real side of her, this animal that just doesn't give up and is very caring of other people.
She had an unbelievable career, like you said, world champions and the like. Oh. But do you feel if she hadn't had all that pressure on her, other results may have been different?
Yeah, I think if she hadn't got injured before that Olympics, Rama, she's a legend. I mean, you're an Olympic gold medalist as a track athlete. You're in a rare air, Sally Pierce and Kathy Freeman. You know, this is rarefied air. And she deserved to be there. And then when that all started to go, you know, the injury got her, she did lose a bit with the public. And I think she lost her way a little bit for a while. And she kept trying to win it back and never could quite get there. So, yeah, I don't think she's held in where she should be. I mean, athletic circles understand 2-time world champion is just phenomenal, but the public probably should just need that next level, and injury was the only thing that really got her.
When your editor found out that you sat on the story for a period of time, Scotland, what was the feedback?
Well, because, Daniel, the 5-pack pages, front pages I delivered a few days later, I think they were much happier. Like, we followed her to London where she had a surgery. We had a photographer, this is a great story, in the hospital practically taking photos as she's wheeled into surgery. So we well and truly cashed in on the my decision, Daniel, to play the care card.
Have you ever done that before or since?
No. Well, you get in trouble. Like Kathy Freeman, there was a couple of things she told me that to sit on for a little while, which were pretty big, but that was a little bit different. AFL footballs, you don't get many care cards thrown out because their managers, those types, are never nice to you. So you don't bother with the care card there.
You journalist types just get in the way there. Just build rapport. Build rapport. Yeah. Get on the end of the bed. And just
do some work.
Do your shoulder, Scotty.
Well, it's old relationship.
Don't be an ambulance chaser.
No, it's the good old days of going to training with sheets and standing there and talking. I mean, I miss those days. They were the proper days, watching Rammer, you know, kick it out on the full at Windy Hill and stuff.
It's a windy place. Very windy.
Actually, I got at least to see that, whereas the new breed of journos would have no idea. They wouldn't even know where to go to training. So it's sad, but fortunately I got to see a bit of that.
It is funny how quickly it has changed. And I know I've spoken about this a bit over the time that, you know, if a journalist would go to football training and stay until the end of training, often the coach would reward the journo with a story or a quote because they'd stayed because they're allowed to stay. Now you can't get into any training session except potentially the captain's run when no one ever does anything. It's just the whole thing's changed, and that's why you get so much more gossipy type of stuff, speculative stuff, opinion pieces in the paper.
Yeah, no, it's sad, Waddy. It really is. I mean, you talk to the young ones now, and they just, yeah, that's just not in their mindset to just go out and talk to someone. What do you mean? I'll tweet them or text them or FaceTime them or something.
What we'll do at the moment is focus on the Melbourne Renegades. We had a chat to Elise Villani the other day from the Melbourne Stars ahead of their opener last night against the Sixers. Didn't go their way, but the Renegades, Rammer, kick off their campaign, my girls, tomorrow against Hobart, the home team. For check your local guides for times. But Sophie Molyneux is the skipper of the Mighty Red team, and she's with us on a Friday morning. Good morning, Soph.
Morning, guys. How are you?
We're very excited about the WBBL kicking off. It was a really tense encounter last night, rain marred though it was. Are you pretty keen to get back into it?
Yeah, I think so. It was a good game last night. We're all sort of watching and hoping to get a result. But yeah, it's been great. The girls we've all come in from different states, different countries, and so we spent the last couple of days trying to get to know each other, which is the beauty of franchise cricket. So yeah, we're looking forward to playing tomorrow. Hopefully the weather stays off.
We were talking to Elise the other day about that, about getting them players from all over the shop and all over the world to come together and be a team, and the challenge that you face doing that. As the captain, I imagine you're a fair part of trying to make that connection happen. How do you go about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We've got a couple of Indians this year, Eve Jones from England, and then girls from pretty much every state in Australia. So to get everyone in the same room, that was our first sort of challenge. We got that ticked off a couple of days ago, and yeah, since then I think we've sort of done a couple of team things. We've watched cricket together and just a couple of team meetings here and there, but I think naturally that stuff sort of comes together and yeah, I think once you start playing, things like that get easier. So, yeah, we're just really keen to get going.
So, Sophie, what's your best or favourite icebreaker activity with that type of stuff?
Personally, I'd like to get us around a campfire and sing a few tunes and have a couple of beers, but you can't really do that down in Tassie because it's been raining nonstop. So, yeah, we've done a couple of different things. We've sort of got together and had a couple of drinks and nibbles and sort of had a joke. And actually, one of our Indians, Jemima Rodriguez, she plays the guitar, so, and she's not shy, so she sung a few Ed Sheeran songs to break the ice.
Oh,
so
nice.
Yeah, that was pretty handy.
So we're seeing the WBBL evolve every year now, just getting better and better. Girls are bowling faster. Girls are hitting the ball further as well. What are you expecting out of the tournament this year?
Yeah, I think, like, even just watching game one last night, 99 got chased down in 11 overs and in pretty tricky conditions. So I think, yeah, the scores are probably just going to get higher. It's a batter's game, I reckon. I think, like, yeah, the bowlers are getting quicker and the spinners are probably getting a bit smarter and a bit more experienced. And, yeah, the girls are hitting the ball harder. So, yeah, hopefully it's even more of a spectacle this year.
How's Simon Helmet's comedy routine going? Is he making people laugh yet?
Oh, Helmo, he's brilliant. He's, I don't know how he does it, but he stays at level 100 24/7, and he's great for the group, I think. We've had a big turnover of players and staff this year, and to get everyone together and, you know, a lot of fresh faces, he's just made things feel comfortable, and he's got a great way of bringing the group together, and he's had a lot of success around the world in T20 cricket, so it's been great to sort of pick his brains, and it's his first sort of real crack in the women's game, so it's great to see him bring some of his stuff that he's taken around the world into our game, hopefully.
Yeah, and as you touched on, in all seriousness, I mean, he's perfect for your group in the sense that, as you said, there's so many changes, and it's not like there's eight from Victoria representing the Melbourne Renegades. His skills in the experiences he's had over the world, I reckon, could be a massive advantage for you.
Absolutely. I think he looks at things differently, and I don't think the women's game have really thought about some of the stuff that he sort of has brought up already in team meetings and stuff like that. So I think it's just really cool. Like, the girls are really interested and keen to try new things, and I think it's a great way of looking at it. And he's certainly, as I said, he's had a lot of success. So all the girls are well and truly behind him, that's for sure.
Max Lynch is a Goliath. He's a big man, a very, very big man. And he used to wear stripes of black and white. Now, after the AFL trade period, the stripes stay the same. The colours change to the brown and the gold. He's been good enough to join us this morning. Good morning, Max.
G'day, how's it going?
Good, thank you, pal. Nice to have you with us. Have you tried the jumper on yet? Have you seen what the different colours stripes look like?
No, I haven't yet. I've had the polo on, but yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to suit me. Hopefully good, hopefully well.
So your name was discussed a fair bit through the last 10 days or so. What's that like to know that you, maybe not your career's on the line, but there's so much discussion about what your future might look like? How do you cope with that?
To be honest, I reckon it's pretty weird. going from, you know, just a bloke in Albury, growing up in Albury with my family and friends, and then seeing your name sort of in the papers and stuff, I'm sort of going, it doesn't look right being in there. But it was pretty cool as well, though, because actually when I found out that it was done and dusted and I got traded, my grandparents actually found out before I did. and then I got a call from a manager and said it's gone through. But then, yeah, sort of almost got spoiled because, yeah, everyone else found out before I did.
Max, was it simply a case of enough's enough? You just completed your fourth year of football at the Pies, but you're still sitting behind, obviously, Brody Grundy, Darcy Cameron's still there. You go to Hawthorn now. Ben McAvoy is obviously a little bit older, but do you feel like there's a more opportunity for you at Hawthorn?
Yeah, that's the sole reason I thought that I'd potentially like to move clubs. Because of that opportunity that can be put in front of me. But it was a really, really hard decision because I really loved my time at the Pies. I got some of my best mates there. But it's been so good as well to learn off Brody off the past 4 or 5 years. But, yeah, I thought it was time to sort of explore that because I want to see how I can go at AFL level, and I think I can give it a red-hot crack, so I just sort of needed that go.
So a lot of people think these conversations just happen really quickly, and they, you know, you can just get to a club basically whenever you want. But when did you start speaking to your manager or even to the club about this is potentially on the cards?
It was actually about a year ago because we were in the hub and I'd played well for the majority of the year, but that opportunity sort of didn't really come. Brody's one of the most durable blokes around, so it didn't really have a week off. So it was a pretty honest conversation at the end of the year about I could potentially explore my options, but last year was a bit of a weird year and nothing ended up eventuating. So it's sort of been a long time in the making. And then after another consistent year of footy, it sort of became a more real possibility for me.
How frustrating is that, Max? Because I must confess I had to just check a couple of times to work out how many games you played. I thought you played a lot more than what you have. You played two this year. Does it just get to the point where it's like enough's enough?
It's hard not to sort of let it get on top of you, I suppose. But I really focused on this year that regardless of what level I was playing, I wanted to sort of be the best teammate I could. So even though it wasn't essentially going my way and I wasn't playing where I wanted to be playing, I still really like tried to just think about how I can improve or how to still keep knocking down the door or put my hand up for selection. So even though, yeah, it was quite frustrating at times, I still had one of the best years playing in the twos with my mates, and obviously played some good footy, which sort of led me to this point. So it was still a good result in the end.
And that, I guess that's the other part of it too, adding to that frustration, is that over the last 2 years, it's not like there's been a structured, consistent VFL competition to play in. So whether it's scratch matches or training, it's kind of hard to impress.
Yeah, well, it kind of... it was a little bit like that, but I think it also... You're still getting in front of other clubs, so even though it might have not had a structured stat sheet and things like that, if you do a couple of good things well, or you're still turning up every week with a good attitude, I still think it was held well by the coaches. So they still know what you're doing. There's still vision and things. So even though, yeah, like I said, it wasn't in front of crowds, or it wasn't in front of, or it wasn't even 18v18 sometimes, it was bloody 13v13 at one point. But even though it didn't look like normal AFL, it was still a good opportunity.
Do you go into Hawthorn and have to change something? Now, as you mentioned, Brody, unbelievably durable. But is there something in your game that you go, I need to change this physically, mentally, whatever that may be, to give yourself the best opportunity to play regularly?
I think the biggest thing for me is just trying to put on as much sort of physical size as I can. Running and my jumps and things like that have always sort of been my strength, but obviously not being the tallest ruckman around, I've got to sort of be able to match it with those bigger guys. So I think that's my biggest thing. And then also just, I think the more that I can expose myself against those better players in an actual AFL scenario, I think I can really grow with the game.
How much conversation did you have with new coach Sam Mitchell in the last 10 days?
We had one Zoom meeting just to sort of, I think it was sort of a test on my end, see whether they like me as a guy or not, but I think it went pretty well. And then I just met him the other day. I was in at the club yesterday, so I had a good chat to him then, but I actually had a little bit to do with him here and there outside of the last 10 days. It was during the year when we had a few scratchies and practice matches and stuff. So I've actually played under him a couple times before. So
of course. That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.